From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 8th day of March 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about this morning's USDA report, that with Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas, and the impact it had in Chicago. The president made some discussion points about trade that was actually the big influencer on the day, and we'll take that up as well. We'll also take a look at the SCO crop insurance decision that you've probably been discussing with your insurance agent over the last couple of days, or will certainly be discussing next week. I'll talk with Martin Barbary. He is the administrator of the RMA, the Risk Management Agency. You'll want to be sure to listen to that. And then on Monday, we'll take up some more of those decision points with Gary Schnicki. And you can hear something about crop insurance right now online if you'd like at willag.org. I reposted something from mid-February with Gary. As we close out our time together, we'll discuss, of course, the weather forecast, too. That with Eric Snodgrass from Agrible, and it all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's turn our attention now to the marketplace. We're joined by Mike Zuzulo at Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Mike, I want to get to the USDA numbers that came out at 11 o'clock Central Time, the World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates. That probably wasn't the biggest item for the day. The president is back in the market, right?
Yeah, the president and his cabinet and his negotiators. And, you know, Terry Branstad started it off today in the Wall Street Journal before the numbers came out, saying that there was no date set for the U.S.-China trade summit, Todd. So I think the best way to classify today's report was, while we had factored in a lot of bearish supply-demand information, we did not get anything in the WASD numbers to provide enough support or lift from a supply-demand fundamental standpoint to offset a declining market confidence that the trade deal is going to get done. And I have to say, I'm in that camp, as we talked about at the all-day outlook meeting. I really think time is of the essence. The North Korea walk away by the president does not bode well for the negotiations. And, you know, between Branstad's comments and President Trump saying that we'll do very well with or without a China trade deal, it kind of feels like they're tamping down expectations, kind of like they did before the North Korea summit. And I think that's what we're dealing with essentially after these numbers came out.
So back to the numbers, though, I would have thought, and this is the first number we'll give you, that the ending stocks for corn, which were up 100 million bushel from 1.735 to 1.835, would have had a pretty good sized impact on the corn market. The soybean number actually dropped 10 million bushels down to what, 900, I think, million as a carryover for this coming for this year. And they're the ones that dropped out. Why is this the case?
You know, I think there's a couple things. One of the biggest, I think, was how we went into this report and the structure of the market, the premium of the November beans against the December corn, it being at 2.41 times premium December corn, that being the highest since early June of last year. And this is in the midst of the weather issues that we are contending with in both spring wheat and corn in terms of springtime planting. I think also you add to that CGNOIC came out yesterday, China's government leg for the grains, and said some areas of China's hog production areas, the provinces, have seen a 20% drop in meal demand. USDA actually did cut the Chinese crush back by a million metric tons. So you do have, I think, some supporting evidence now that African swine fever is indeed cutting into China's soy demand. Fortunately, that was offset somewhat by Brazil's production cut in soybeans by USDA of about a half a million tons. But I think you went into this market with such a premium in the beans compared to the corn and wheat. I told clients last night on my copy, and I don't think a lot of them realized it, that we are now, whether you're in Illinois growing soft red wheat or in Nebraska growing hard red wheat or Kansas growing hard red wheat, we are at new crop prices a dollar below USDA's average price of $5.20 in the cash when it comes to going to the elevator and booking new crop wheat or selling new crop wheat. And I think that just shows you what a discount the wheat has and how it's pulled down on the corn so much.
And you've said that wheat needs to lead. That's clearly going the wrong way.
Yeah, and that nothing changed in today's report because the USDA did cut the U.S. corn exports. We all saw the ethanol cut coming, but even the bears out there in corn that thought exports would be cut, which I was not one of them, thought that 100 million bushels is quite a bit. I think from a statistical and analytical standpoint, it's hard to cut such a large number, especially and cut it all when you have corn being pulled down so much during the month of February. That should actually attract more demand, especially given these livestock numbers we continue to slaughter.
Yeah, so let me go back to something I think you told me, but I want to make sure that I have this right. So you talked about a premium in the soybeans, and you gave us the ratio at some point. I think it was at 2.1. That was the number you dropped out during the all-day ag outlook. So either corn has to go up in price or soybeans need to go down if acreage is going to be balanced in the United States.
Yes, and the ratio right now is 2.41, and I'm suggesting that without a trade deal, it probably will go all the way down to 2.1 if this weather pans out to provide additional soybean acres in both spring wheat from spring wheat and from corn. So essentially, Todd, the negative news that I think we need to really address from a risk management standpoint and taking care of business, being profitable, is that my undervalue number of November beans of 785 is becoming a more practical, rational, likely number if we don't get a trade deal and Mother Nature works against the Northern Hemisphere corn and spring wheat planting. So while 930, where we're at going into Friday's close, is not a pleasant number, and you see the cash market at an even more disappointing price, when you factor in a dollar basis out west and 50, 60 cent basis back your way, it still suggests to me the futures has a premium enough to put hedges in place if we don't hold these technicals, and those technicals being 895 and lead month futures going into Friday's close.
Okay, so we've gone through a couple of the numbers that really are important. The 100 million more ending stocks for corn, 10 million less for soybeans. We talked about the wheat numbers. What about all in the United States? What about on the global scale?
Yeah, best thing that happened today was corn ending stocks actually went down versus last month because of a stronger demand base against a slightly declining supply base. And that was very, very supportive from a world perspective. Wheat, however, came back in with a 270.5 ending stocks number, million metric tons for the world. That was above the highest trade guess. Here again, that keeps the wheat in the leadership position for bringing a corn bottom in the market. I'd say after today's report of 107.1 million metric tons for soybean ending stocks in the world, that was right smack dab pretty much in the middle of the range, maybe a little bit on the low end of the range. Beans probably received overall, like you said at the top of the show, the best numbers from a U.S., both U.S. and global perspective. And that's where what we're trading in the futures market is more about trade and U.S.-China trade. And bottom lining it out, those numbers are going to grow if we don't get a China trade deal. And that's where I think the trade has been keeping a premium in the soy.
We'll talk to you again next week.
Great to be with you. Thanks, Todd.
Hey, thanks so much. That is Mike Zuzulo with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. I'd like to talk with you a little bit this afternoon about the crop insurance decisions you're making right now, in particular the SCO, or the supplemental coverage option, that your crop insurance agents have been telling you about. I was considering that myself yesterday afternoon, and it dawned on me that if the president actually is capable of pulling off a trade deal with China, that I would choose a different, potentially, farm safety net. I would choose ARC instead of PLC, potentially, as it might have an impact on how much corn is moving across the planet. However, in the crop insurance decision today, because the premiums could be, well, substantially less under an SCO program, then you would be in PLC. So I wanted to know if these two programs, because they're decisions that need to be made in separate timeframes across the year, but are related to each other, actually will impact one another. And the case is really, yes, they will. However, there is some flexibility. I asked Martin Barbary, who's the administrator of RMA, the Risk Management Agency at USDA, to explain some of this. First, we'll start with the SCO decision and how that will work through the time that acreage is certified for wheat, corn, and soybeans. Up front, that March 15 date he talks about is for wheat. Corn and soybeans is later this year.
Okay, Todd. We've come up with a very somewhat complicated situation in that producers have a sales closing date of March 15th to purchase their SCO. They probably, based on the Secretary's comments in the Congress last week, will probably have until sometime next spring to actually make that. And when I say next spring, I'm talking about spring of 20, to make that actual election between ARC and PLC. Under the program as it's written, if you have PLC, you're eligible for the SCO. If you put a certain number of acres under the ARC program, you're not eligible for SCO. Creates quite a dilemma for us. We have put out a manager's bulletin that says, number one, and producers who have wheat have probably already bought their SCO policies. Those producers will have an option. They can first, and this is in the manager's bulletin, but I'm reading out of our facts as well, that they will have a chance to cancel those SCO policies by March 15th if they decide to. If those who this allows producers, particularly those who intend to elect ARC for their acres, to no longer incur those crop insurance costs for coverage with which they normally wouldn't be eligible. Now, for the 2019 crop, and this is where it gets, producers need to pay attention to this. They will have the option to file an ARC PLC acreage intention report by their acreage reporting date, or if their acreage reporting date has already passed by March 15th, which for most producers in Illinois and the Midwest, that acreage reporting date is going to be July 15th. So it's the later of those two dates. This acreage intention report will be filed with their crop insurance company and an agent, not FSA. We've already had some questions about that. I want to make that very clear. When the producer makes a decision to file this acreage intention report, after the acreage reporting date of July 15th, that will be the actual acres covered by SCO, irrelevant for the 19 crop of the final ARC PLC decision.
I had Administrator Barbary repeat that for me.
So producers will have the option, as I say, by July 15th of filing an acreage intention report on their acreage reporting date. And they have to, once they do that, they decided, say they had, I'm going to just use an example, if they had 100 acres and they put 50 in ARC and 15 PLC, and they file that acreage reporting date on that date, then they would be eligible for 50 acres of purchasing 50 acres of SCO. So that would, the 50 acres of SCO would be their final SCO coverage. They're irrelevant of what they do when they make the final decision between ARC and PLC. That's why we're doing this. We don't want to do something that affects whether a producer makes that election between ARC and PLC. We don't want to affect that decision. And by doing this, we've taken that out of their equation.
Right. So let me see if I summarize this correctly. I make the decision. I choose SCO when I certify my acreage with the crop insurance agency. However many acres that is, that's locked into SCO for the 2019 premiums. However, when I make the decision on ARC and PLC, I still have the choice.
You have the total choice on all your acres. That's correct.
In the future, to actually put, and this is weird, but the put all of those, I could put all my acres in ARC.
That is correct.
And still be paying the SCO premium.
That is correct.
So they're, yes. they're related but separate.
Yes.
Separate issues.
Yep.
Okay. I talked to Martin Barbary earlier today. He is the administrator of the Risk Management Agency at the United States Department of Agriculture. We'll have more on the SCO decision with Gary Schnitke on Monday. He's going to go through some new numbers, though you can listen to the discussion I had with him about this in mid-February on our website already. It's there at willag.org. Let's turn our attention on this Friday afternoon now to the weather forecast for the growing regions across the planet. Eric Snodgrass is here from Agrible First. Eric, thank you for kicking off the Tuesday event over at the Beef House. It was a great way to get started for the all-day ag outlook, and I know all those folks that were on hand just really enjoyed the presentation that you made.
Yeah, that's, like I said, one of my favorite events. I really enjoyed doing that one.
Let's talk a little bit about the weather forecast now. What's up in the near term?
Yeah, well, in the near term, we're watching a pretty vigorous low-pressure system emerging from the Great Plains today. And as it does so, we have the severe weather to the south in Texas and Oklahoma. That'll press to the east on Saturday. So we have another big severe weather day coming up on Saturday for basically points to the south of the Ohio River where it meets the Mississippi. So it's going to be all along the southern Mississippi River Valley, pressing over into the Tennessee Valley, and then eventually over toward the southeast. So the severe storms down there, there is, again, another significant tornado threat. So, you know, we just recently had a pretty nasty outbreak there. You get north of there where we are, this is going to be a rain event for us. May start off seeing a little bit of a mixture of sleet and freezing rain, especially over toward Iowa, northern Illinois, but mostly an all rainfall event here, maybe picking up between a half inch to an inch and a half across the state. Some locations may get more if they get under one of these thunderstorms. So we might even see some thunderstorm activity around here. But the bigger issue is that rain to the south and then the snow to the north. This system that's coming through is going to put down quite a bit of snow in North and South Dakota, even far northwestern Iowa and then Minnesota, where we've already got a lot of snow down. And this is just round number one. We got a second one of these systems coming out probably on Wednesday into early Thursday next week. It's almost a wash, rinse, repeat setup here. So again, more severe weather south, rain for us, and then snow over the northern plains. So what this builds into is this continuing narrative of the flood threat we're going to have this spring with so much snow still on the ground of the northern plains and the fact that the lower Mississippi River Valley is already flooding. We got to get that water out of here. And the near term, two big systems coming through, and that's got me really concerned for any sort of early field work.
Any chance of a pattern change later on?
Yeah, so one of the things we've been noticing over the last 3 days with the European model and the GFS is falling in line with this, is that we're going to see this trough that's kicking off all of these big low-pressure systems in the middle part of the country finally slide east and north a bit. Now, the problem with that is that's not a pattern that gets us warm, but that is a pattern that makes us drier. So looking at week two, so not this week that's coming up, but the following week, we actually see our longer range models picking up on a drier pattern, but we still got to go through these two big systems to get there. We like to see that, though. We need to be drying down somewhat because as we start to creep on into April, we need to be able to get in these fields and get in them fast. So drain that water away. I'd like seeing a drier week two pattern.
Speaking of April, and I know it's a long ways out, do we have any indication of what that month will look like?
Yeah, we've been kind of putting together a story about April for the last few weeks, and that story continues with the latest updates from the long-range European model. Good news is the three runs in a row now of this longer range European model wants to bring in a ridge across the eastern United States once we get into April. So cool until then, but once we get into April, wants to break that down. Now, this will be very much unlike a year ago where we had almost the exact opposite pattern. That means that we could start to expect, I think, much more normal spring-like weather in terms of temperatures by the time we get to the very end of March and the beginning of April. So I couldn't be happier to be able to tell people that. Unfortunately, getting there is going to be rough.
Turn your attention to South America. It's getting later in the season there.
They're basically back to the equivalent of our fall. The thing is, though, we're noticing that we've been discussing maybe Brazil's major corn regions look to be dry through middle of this month, maybe toward the end of the month, and certainly we're starting to see that coming out in the models now. And so what that translates into is this safrinha crop that's in this corn and also a cotton crop. It's going to be kind of going into a drier time period as we progress forward. So we have to watch to see what that means in terms of yields. Certainly the last few weeks in Brazil, though, have been wet. Things have been looking pretty good there.
Hey, thanks so much, Eric.
Yeah, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible, joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Be sure to stick around if you can for the next half hour as we'll bring you Commodity Week with Dan Zwicker, Brian Stark, and Merrill Crowley. If not, you'll find it up online at about 4 o'clock this afternoon at willag.org.